Intelligent Transportation Systems Podcast. Welcome everyone. This is the Intelligent Transportation Systems Podcast, Episode 2, for June 2013. I'm Javier Sánchez Medina from the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society. For this episode, we will have Professor Matthew Barth. As director of the Center for Environmental Research and Technology, he was interviewed by Professor Jeffrey Miller from the University of Alaska Anchorage. Among many other things, they had a really interesting discussion on the relationship of intelligent transportation systems and the climate change. We will also tell you something about the history of kites. Yes, kites. Simple but really old and fascinating. So let's start. Stay with us and enjoy it.
This is the news mini section for episode 2, June 2013. Google is reportedly in discussions to purchase the Maps application Waze in order to integrate it with Google Maps. Waze is a source-crowded software which provides real-time information on traffic conditions, accidents, etc. It gathers data and information from users, and this is shared through a smartphone application. A Google spokesperson said that embedding Waze into Google Maps would complement a product they already have and make it better, as opposed to representing a leading product that they already compete with. They are expecting Facebook to fight back, probably settling a claim with the antitrust office in USA. A new report from the World Economic Forum titled Connected World: Transforming Travel, Transportation and Supply Chain has been released. This new report provides an estimation where a dramatic change is foreseen on how people and goods will move around the Earth in 2025. According to that review, the essential element will be hyperconnectivity. A deep, efficient information distribution would help to fight congestion. New biometric techniques, RFID technologies, and others will provide security and efficiency to the global mobility of people and goods. We cannot forget reminding our listeners that the 2013 IEEE Intelligent Vehicles Symposium will take place in Gold Coast at the end of this month. It seems to be a conference to remember. For instance, Professor Tatsuhiro Nishinari will talk about a new interesting topic called gemology. We are planning to interview Professor Nishinari for a future episode, so stay tuned. Finally, next October, the flagship conference of the ITS Society will be held in The Hague. You can still register. Bob Denaro will speak about ITS connecting and extrapolating the dots. Links to all of this can be found at this podcast website.
Transportation in history. Humanity has always dreamt about flying. Since Greek Icarus legend to Leonardo da Vinci drawings, our envy for birds and other flying beings has always been there. And we made it, starting with the hydrogen balloons in the 18th century and then the hot air balloon invented by the Montgolfier brothers, we finally conquered the air. But what was at the beginning of it all? Kites. It's well known that the Chinese invented kites more than 2000 years ago. Nobody knows who and why invented them, but one legend suggests that when a Chinese farmer tied a string to his hat to keep it from blowing away in a strong wind, the first kite was born. First used as war tools, they evolved to many different uses. It seems that the earliest written proof of kite flying was about 200 BC, when the Chinese general Han Xin flew a kite over the walls of a city to precisely measure how long should be a tunnel they were digging to get his troops inside. And they did it. There is another war episode in Korea around the year 600, where the kite carrying a fireball was enough to encourage the troops of General Jin Yu-sin to subdue a revolt. Very differently, in the 18th and 19th centuries, kites were used as vehicles and tools for scientific research. They were used by Benjamin Franklin and Alexander Wilson to learn about wind and weather, and many researchers, including Alexander Graham Bell and the Wright brothers, used them to develop the first airplanes. They've also been used as a traction tool, like the invention of the schoolmaster George Pocock in 1822, where a pair of kites instead of horses pull a carriage at speeds up to 20 miles per hour. That smart inventor skipped paying any road tolls, since all road taxes in that time were based on the number of horses a carriage used. Of course, after airplanes became more available, kites fell out of favor. However, in the last half a century, they seem to be returning to many applications, like navigation and many leisure and sport activities, especially because it leaves a very little carbon fingerprint behind. And some researchers are also proposing kite-like propelled spaceships that could eventually use the solar wind instead of any atmospheric wind. So when your kid asks you for money to become a kite surfer, think how old and fascinating is that simple tool that with no oil or electricity can take a part of you up in the air. Now we will have the main course of this episode, the interview to Professor Matthew Barth, done at his research center by Jeffrey Miller. I'm sure you'll find this juicy.
Hello, this is Jeffrey Miller from the University of Alaska Anchorage. We're at the Center for Environmental Research and Technology with Professor Matthew Barth from the University of California, Riverside. He is a Jaeger Family's Professor of Electrical Engineering and also director of this research center. Professor Barth, can you introduce yourself to our audience?
Well, thanks, Jeff. Yes, again, my name is Matt Barth. I've been here at UC Riverside now for about 20 years. In the electrical engineering department, and as you mentioned, part of our Center for Environmental Research and Technology. So I've been doing ITS research now for a number of years, mainly looking at ITS and the relationship it has with the environment in terms of energy and air pollution. So that's sort of the area that I've been doing work in for the last several years.
Professor Barth, thank you very much for hosting us today. This is a big research center. How many people do you have in your center? How many professors and PhD candidates?
Well, our Environmental Research Center is actually multidisciplinary. So we have members from electrical engineering, mechanical engineering, chemical, environmental engineering, computer science. So all together, if you include students, faculty, and staff, it's about 150 people. In terms of graduate students, we have about 65 master's and PhD students that work here at our center, and then probably another 50 or so undergraduates that do their research projects here.
Can you tell us what your main research lines and projects are?
So our research center is organized into five different groups, and they're groups that have different faculty from the different departments. Our largest group deals with measuring emissions, pollutant emissions, and the effects of fuels. We have a fairly sizable transportation group that looks at vehicle activity, ITS, a little bit on the electric vehicle side. Another group that works in atmospheric chemistry looks at the secondary pollutants that occur in the atmosphere. And then we have three separate energy groups. One that works on liquid fuels that are produced from different kinds of biomass. Another group that looks at synthetic fuels that comes from all sorts of different types of carbon. And then lastly, a solar energy group that looks at different kinds of new solar technology, solar thermal devices, photoelectric devices, and applications. So it's a number of these groups that sort of interact together, focusing on, you know, environmental issues such as air pollution, global climate change, and then also in the area of energy systems.
Professor, you've recently published a paper in the Transactional Intelligent Transportation Systems about eco-routing navigation. Can you explain that concept?
Sure. So I think everyone is familiar with the navigation systems that exist on cars or the ones that you can buy down at the store. These Navi systems essentially allow you to figure out what's the best way to get from point A to point B. Most of those are based on a distance measure. What's the shortest path in terms of distance from that point to the next? Others that have real-time traffic information can let you know what's the fastest way to get there. So if there's congestion, it'll route you on a path that's going to be the fastest in terms of time. This eco-routing concept is sort of similar, but what it's doing, it's calculating your energy use as you go down the road. So it looks for a route that's going to minimize the amount of energy you have to spend, again, from getting from point A to point B. So it's focused on saving fuel, reducing emissions, and lowering your greenhouse gas output.
If I understand your work correctly, the main optimization criterion you're using is minimizing the carbon footprint of a travel route. But could you tell us how is that criterion related to other important goals, such as energy saving, average travel time, or the total throughput of the network? Do you think your proposed system can optimize several of these simultaneously, or do you think, in your experience, that there are orthogonal variables, so a balance between them should be tuned anyway?
Well, it turns out that there's many different factors here, and they're pretty much in tune with each other. They're generally non-orthogonal. So if you have no congestion at all, then typically your best path going from point A to point B is going to be your least distance, which is going to be the least amount of time, which is going to be the least amount of energy that it takes. But when you start to introduce congestion, road grade factors, and things like that, then they start to differ. So a shortest distance route might not necessarily be the same as a shortest time path, or it might not be the same as the least energy path. So that's part of what we study is, you know, under what conditions do those three paths change? And as I said, the main factors deal with congestion and road grade and other conditions on the road.
Have you found that they are different?
So under heavy congestion conditions, they are strikingly different. So it might be where it's beneficial to have a vehicle go down major arterials as opposed to highways, especially under these congested conditions.
Is there a demand of this information from local government or travelers? Have you detected somehow that there's a real interest in some travelers wanting to use these less polluted routes, even when it means arriving later to their destinations?
So the reaction to this is interesting, and it kind of depends on different factors. So when we have an increase in our gasoline prices, then people start to pay more attention to this. They're looking for any way they can save a little bit of on the fuel costs. And by employing this type of algorithm, you can do a little bit of percentage savings. So, but if gas prices are low, then again, there's not such a strong importance that people put on it. There are a couple companies that have licensed the technology, so there are people that are working on commercializing it and getting it out there in the real world.
That's interesting. We're going to take a short break and be back in a few minutes with Professor Matt Barth. Stay tuned.
Are you enjoying this podcast? Then please help us spreading the voice. We need your help. Please follow us on Twitter, Facebook, or Google+. You can also retweet us, like us, etc. You can find how to do it at itsb.cicei.com. Thank you very much for your help. Let's get back to that interesting interview.
Before the break, we were talking about the motivation of public and private society sectors. Do you think that California is leading the way in this kind of initiative since, for example, dramatic actions were taken to reduce the air pollution in Southern California many years ago?
Well, Southern California and California in general have always sort of been at the forefront in terms of environmental technology. Back in the 70s and 80s, there was pretty severe air pollution in Southern California, so that, you know, the state government itself created an air resources board and also local air quality management districts to take care of many of these air pollution problems. And so that's been sort of a major focus now for two decades. And then just recently, in the last 5 years, a lot of that focus is shifting now to global climate change, so looking at greenhouse gases and things like that. So I would say, yes, I think California is at the forefront in enabling new rules and regulations in terms of how to manage both air pollution, greenhouse gases, and also try to manage energy consumption as well.
It seems that China is also taking big steps towards fighting air pollution in Beijing and other big cities. Do you have research project plans outside of the U.S.?
So we have several researchers that we work with actually in China, Beijing Jiaotong University and Tsinghua University. We have research relationships where, you know, we exchange ideas on how to better manage air pollution, traffic issues, and things like that. China certainly has a problem in that there's a lot of more vehicle traffic at this time and still a lot of industrial growth. I know for the Beijing Olympics, they did a really good job in terms of managing air pollution issues and things like that. But ever since the Olympics, you know, the amount of driving increases and the economic activity increases. So China definitely still has many things to try to solve, and we're hoping by collaborating with some of our colleagues over there, we can come up with some unique solutions that help help improve the situation.
Professor, as director of this Center for Environmental Research, you must have a very well-grounded idea on one of the biggest scientific concerns that has emerged in the last few years. I'm referring to global climate change. We've recently learned that the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere has been raised to up to 400 parts per million. In your view, what is the role of ITS technologies in the context of global climate change?
Well, Jeff, that's a very good question. You know, I think there's a lot of concerns with global climate change, and as we know, a lot of it's dictated by greenhouse gases that are put into the atmosphere. One of the major greenhouse gases, of course, is carbon dioxide. And then if you look at the transportation sector, about a third of all CO2 that goes in the air comes from transportation, so surface transportation with cars, ships, and things like that. So then if you look at how do we reduce CO2 from transportation, you can improve the efficiency of cars, you know, the hybrids, things like that. You can look at less carbon-intensive fuels. You can try to enact programs that get people to drive less, so you reduce the amount of driving. But then when you look at ITS, its main role is to improve the efficiency of how we move about. So rather than being stuck in congestion and dealing with that all the time, we can figure out ways to move people around and goods around so that it's much more efficient, that we're not wasting energy and not putting a lot of CO2 in the air. So there's a number of ITS projects that are specifically aimed at reducing CO2, and those are taking place both in Europe, the U.S., and in Asia. So it's an exciting place to be right now.
Can you tell us about the research funding that centers working in environmental research receive? Are you suffering from any funding cuts in this internationally complicated economic situation?
So, Jeff, in terms of the funding, you know, our research center is funded from three major areas. One is from the U.S. federal government, places like Department of Energy, Department of Transportation, U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and then another third or so comes from the local state government. And again, this is the Air Resources Board, the California Department of Transportation. And then another third, we get funding from various sources within industry, so automotive manufacturers and other people that come to us, and we work together on various research projects. So when you look at the economic situation, we're fairly well diversified, where, you know, not all three of those are suffering at once, and so we still manage to do pretty well in terms of our research funding. There has been a little bit of a downturn the last couple of years, but we're certainly picking up now with some new research projects.
And then what are your center's future plans? Can you tell us what's in the oven right now?
Well, we're very excited because we're now doing more work in the electric vehicle and also the smart grid research area. In fact, we just got a fairly sizable grant from our local air quality management district to look at the interface between electric vehicles and the smart grid. So we are going to deploy a test bed here at a research center that involves a number of passenger electric vehicles and some other electric vehicle technology. It's going to be connected in with solar generation, so we're going to have a number of carports that are solar carports. And then lastly, there's a group that studies battery energy storage. And so we're going to strategically put battery energy storage at different places within our smart grid and try to understand better the interaction of EVs, the energy distribution, and the solar generation.
Okay, I think that's it for now. Thank you very much, Professor Barth, for hosting us and sharing your insight about the research going on here. I think that our listeners will definitely appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Jeff. I'm always happy to talk with you and share with the ITS world and what we do here. So thank you.
That's all from UC California at Riverside. This is Professor Jeffrey Miller signing out.
Thank you very much, Professor Barth and Professor Miller. And that was all for this episode. Please visit our website in itsp.cecei.com. You'll be able to leave your comments for this episode or others. And you can also feedback us with improvement ideas, possible interviewees, topics to be included, etc. This podcast is sponsored by the IEEE Intelligent Transportation Systems Society. Website designed and managed by the Innovation Center for the Information Society at the University of Las Palmas de Gran Canaria in Spain. Soundtrack developed by Rubicon. We'll be back soon, bringing you again the cutting edge of science at the Intelligent Transportation Systems podcast. Thanks for listening and drive safe.